Have your thighs ever chafed? Chafe is no joke, but thanks to Mega Babe, it's also no problem. Mega Babe's Thigh Rescue glides onto skin so that chafe is a thing of the past. Experience what 10,000 five-star reviewers rave about at megababebeauty.com.
Down to business with Bobby Kerr.
Brought to you by Bank of Ireland
on News Talk.
Don't know if you've had your breakfast or you're about to have your lunch, but I'm here at an insect factory. A factory called Malatento. It's in the suburbs of Cape Town, and I'm delighted to meet now the founder, who's co-founder, Dean Smorenberg. He's welcomed me here to what I'm going to say in layman's terms is a fly factory, but it's an insect factory, and it's a wonderful business, and I'm about to be taken on a tour. But before I start the tour, and before I put my hand into the larvae, let's say, Dean, can you tell us a little bit about this business? What are you doing here?
Yeah, sure, Bobby. Lovely to have you here. So basically, my background is in business science and management consulting, but I always had a passion for sustainability, and largely from a food waste perspective. So on the one hand, we waste a huge amount of food along our value chain, yet on the other, we have issues of malnutrition. And I don't think we have a food supply problem. We have a food value chain problem that we have here. And so it was always for me, how do you kind of take that food waste and convert it back into the feed chain? And so sort of upcycle it back into the food chain. And so what we set out to do, and we weren't the first company to do it, but we did it a little bit differently, is we take agro-processing byproducts, so things like spent brewery grains, bakery byproducts like your spent breads, and we combine that all together to make a consistent diet for our insects. And we feed it to a baby insect, an insect called the black soldier fly, which is a large waspy looking fly, but it's non-pest, non-pathogenic. And effectively we feed those little baby larvae until they're fully grown. And then once we've got that fully grown larva, we convert that into two types of products. One is a dry protein and oil based product, which goes into pet foods as well as sort of backyard chickens and wild bird feeds, similar to what you might see in the mealworm industry in the UK and the EU. And secondly, we make a product called a digest, which effectively we take those insects, mull them down into a large slurry, we add some enzymes and reactionary flavors to that to hydrolyze the proteins and fats, and then we make flavors out of that for the pet food industry as well as aquaculture and eventually for other traditional livestock.
So again, I know you're a science man, but for a layman just looking at it here, I see the crates of old bread, buns, cakes, grain from the brewery that we were in yesterday down the road. So the raw material is here. You then put that in a temperature environment where you create a fly or a maggot or a larvae. And then that larvae then is, one lot of it is dried, the other part isn't, and they end up either in pet food or food proteins.
That's absolutely right. So the key to our business is that we are actually able to export into the EU as well. So we work in the UK and the EU. And in order to do that, everything we do here is very controlled, it's all traceable. And in those chambers, as you said, that's to create perfect climate so that every insect that comes out is of the same spec that we need for the products. So we really focused on quality, and as you saw earlier, try to keep other pests out of this facility as much as possible, which is always a fun game to play.
How many people are working here, approximately?
So we've got about 65 people, and most of that is sort of blue-collar workers. So, you know, in South Africa, we have large unemployment and everything, so it's quite a privilege to be able to employ people and give them a livelihood and give their families a source of income.
Okay. So how long is the business going, Dean?
Yes, I sort of my insect journey started in my bathroom in about 2016 or 2017 with my wife was my only laborer at that point. And it's grown now. In 2018, Maltento was sort of officially founded. It's gone through a few different iterations. And we've been in this facility since 2019. And now we've grown to the place we are, where we have about 7,000 square meters and producing close to 100 tons a month of larva. So we've walked into the room, which is called the nursery. And basically, this room is very high humidity and a nice high temperature. And effectively, once the flies have laid their eggs, we put the eggs into this room in various forms of collection. And then those little neonates, when they hatch, the baby insects, they hatch out of their eggs, and their natural inclination is to sort of crawl out and drop onto the food, because the fly in nature would lay its eggs in sort of a crack or crevice above a feed source. and they would drop into the feed. So they drop out, and you can see this is how small they are when they're born.
So these are alive.
These are alive.
They're tiny.
Like a YouTube cascading down.
Yeah, wow.
So it's this when there's 40,000 per gram. So what we're looking at, just for your listeners, is basically we've got a tray that is full of baby insects. And if I hold it at a slight angle, because you can't really see them that easily with the naked eye, you can just see this cascade, like a waterfall of these baby insects moving down.
Whoa.
You can see that there. So this is now, so what we're looking at here is once the larva has been harvested, we sort of store the larva in these agri bins, we call them. They're just sort of a big cubic meter bin. And that's just, we'll be here for an hour or two while it gets weights to go into processing. So it's kind of clean larva ready to go into processing. And this is just, this bin holds about 250 to 300 kilos of live larva that they move into processing as soon as there's space for them. Now you can touch them. So this is just, I'm just holding two handfuls of larva and getting my daily therapy. It's kind of like meditation if you think about it. It's really like they just sort of tingle.
Okay, folks, I'm about to put my hand into a big vat of maggots. Stand by. Oh, Jesus, this is terrible. Oh my God. Oh, God, that's awful.
It's quite nice. That's a nice way to do it, Bobby. Just put your hand on top like that and it sort of moves down.
I'm done.
And for what it's worth, so we've been asked by Fear Factor in the past, it was Fear Factor India or something, asked us if we would supply insects for one of their stunts. And we actually said we don't want to, because we never want to do something that instills fear and insects together. So even when I ask you to put your hand in, if you didn't want to, we would never sort of force you to or throw an insect on you. It's important for us.
Yeah, so. Yeah, in order to respect the raw material, but yeah. I have to say it is quite terrifying.
So basically what happens in here, this is sort of our magic, where we produce our digest, which is, we're the first in the world to do this with insects. Basically the larvae go through a blanching step in the front to sterilize them and clean them. They move through a series of mincing devices to basically mince them into a 1,000 odd liter smoothie, and then they get enzymes and all sorts of things added to it to make the meaty sort of yeasty aromas that we make, which then get coated onto the likes of dog food and aquaculture pellets. And really in this room, it's where the sort of the biotech side of the business sits, which is, you know, you're starting to do much more reactionary flavors and things like that. So we have flavorists in our business, and world-class flavorists in our business that help us to develop those.
So you're effectively enhancing the protein, maybe flavoring it, maybe.
Yeah. So much like you would cook your steak on the stove or on a braai, that's what we're doing here. You're using reactionary flavors where the proteins and the amino acids are mixing with sugars, etc., and they create meaty aromas. So it's the same why your steak smells so delicious when it's got that nice brown glazing on it. That's basically what we're doing here. We're just manipulating proteins and fats.
I'm going to leave you now by calling you by your nickname, Dean Smorenberg, Lord of the Flies from Maltento. Thanks for joining us today.
Cheers, Bobby. Thanks so much.
Now, that was me there with Manny Maggots out in South Africa. So while in South Africa, I also got to meet the legendary rugby player, Francois Pienaar. Have a listen to this. Now, it's my great pleasure to welcome to the programme the captain of the South African 1995 World Cup rugby winning team, Francois Pienaar. You're very welcome to the programme.
Thank you very much for having me.
Nearly 30 years on, that big day, Nelson Mandela coming out with your jersey, with your number on his back. How did that feel?
It's just 29 years later, it's still unbelievable. It's unreal. It was surreal. It was magic. It was incredibly emotional. And, you know, once it sunk in, it wasn't immediate. It was months and years, and even driving up to come and see the visitors from Ireland here tonight, we stopped for a coffee, and then people would still remember where they were. Yeah. And that was because of Mr. Mandela. You know, he's so gracious. He came out wearing a Springbok, which nobody would ever would have dreamt of. It's incredible. And I was just so fortunate and lucky to share a platform with him.
How friendly and how close did you get to him over the years?
Well, the great thing is that our friendship grew after the World Cup, which was amazing. You know, when our children were born, our oldest son, Jean, was born in London. He called early in the morning, spoke to my wife, and I thought it was wasn't him, it was a hoax caller. Then I spoke to him and I realized it's him, and he congratulated us and he asked if he could be his godfather. And he then gave him a Xhosa name, Mkokeli, which means leader. I'm very blessed to have had the opportunities to spend time with him. And whenever Madiba was in London, we would have a moment, and also back in South Africa. But he was just so popular, you know, he had such a incredible gift and aura. So yeah, it was fortunate that this grew after the World Cup.
The profound change that happened at that time with sport, with politics, it really did change the nation, didn't it?
It did. And luckily we didn't know it was so massive, because I think the pressure might have been too big. You know, we just focused on winning a rugby game, and it changed. It was the game that did change the nation, definitely.
Going back to the rugby, 29 caps, surely you should have got more.
Well, I was lucky enough to have that, you know, because we were not allowed to play international rugby because of apartheid, which is understandable. And I had the best game, just one game that I'll never forget, which I'm so privileged to, you know, to have captained that team.
When you look, and I know you're still very close to rugby, when you look at the recent success of South Africa in the World Cup, and you look at your team versus the team of today, are there lots of similarities?
This is a reflection. This team that has won the World Cup, the last two World Cups, is a reflection of the modern South Africa. It's a reflection of the new South Africa, where there's players that would never have had an opportunity. I mean, Siya Kolisi's story is incredible.
Yeah.
It's just insane. But then you can go in Makhazole Mpimpi's story, Lukanyo Am's story, all the stories of these kids that didn't have the opportunity to play rugby, that loved rugby, now getting the opportunities, and they're just so good.
You've given so much back, and I know you do an awful lot of work with youth and rugby. Do you get a lot out of that personally?
Absolutely. You know, it's just such a pleasure to see when people are given an opportunity, they take it, and how they can thrive. And I was given that opportunity because of rugby. If it wasn't for rugby, I would not have had an education, because I got a scholarship to go to university because I played fairly decent rugby. So I owe a lot to rugby, and I had a lot of fun.
You were a great cricket player as well, I'm told.
I used to be, and I fancied myself. I would think that cricket, probably I was better at cricket initially than I was at rugby.
No way.
Yeah.
So finally, can I ask you, the politics again changes, as you say, almost 29 years on. There's still a lot of issues. There's a lot of disappointment maybe with society. Are you hopeful for what needs to change in your world, in South Africa? What do you hope can get better?
We need to grow the economy. We need to employ more people. The poor and the vulnerable are suffering. We need to put people in jail that have been corrupt. We've had the Zondo Commission, and we need to see consequences for actions. If you don't see consequences for actions, why would people change their methods? So this election we're going into is vital for the future of South Africa and the growth of South Africa.
Listen, it's a real pleasure to meet you, and thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us. We really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Down to Business with Bobby Kerr.
Brought to you by Bank of Ireland.
Saturday morning at 11 on News Talk.